Welcome to the Month End, a CPG community chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands, as well as other key contributors to the industry, all of which have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Right. Welcome to the Month End, episode number 17. Today we have Kyle Maggard from Overeasy. Kyle's the CEO. How you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing great, Brad. How are you?
Awesome, man. So looking forward to the chat. Kyle and Overeasy has been a client of Accountly for the last couple of years, and the brand's going gangbusters. So we're excited to chat a little bit of finance and ops with Kyle. Kyle, can you give a little background of Overeasy, kind of what you're selling, what you're doing? I see it in the background right there, as well as kind of what your role is, and let's get into it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you can see the packaging popping on that shelf. So Overeasy is a modern breakfast company. Our goal is to give everybody the healthy start, healthy, exciting start that we all deserve in the morning. I started Overeasy in the fall of 2018. I recognized my biggest problem that I was facing every morning consistently was, what do I eat in the morning when I'm so busy and on the go? I went to West Point for my undergrad. I was an Army captain in my previous life. I went to get my MBA, was a busy college student again. Most importantly, I'm a busy husband and father. And I've just always been on the go, like so many other people, like looking for something to eat when I'm running out the door in the morning, or I'm leaving the gym or headed to the gym or going to class, stuck in rush hour traffic. And when I was a little kid, I would eat Pop-Tarts and muffins and little Debbie donut bites. But when you get older and you start worrying about what you're going to eat and you care about what you put in your body, I realized that there was really a big gap in the breakfast space. Everything was coated in sugar. Products hadn't changed since the 80s. And I had just defaulted to these nasty protein bars that I hated waking up to every morning, but I did because there was no other alternative. And so I decided to change that with Overeasy. Our first product is a high protein, high fiber, oat-based breakfast bar, essentially like a bowl of oatmeal pressed into a bar form. And we'll be releasing some new products here over the next several months to build out our portfolio of healthy, delicious, and convenient breakfast foods. We're sold in Whole Foods as our biggest retailer, Wegmans as well, Giant, and we're getting ready for national distribution here in the upcoming spring.
Awesome. My favorite meal is breakfast, and I love it. So,
start your day.
Exactly. So, well, good. So, so you're the CEO. Kind of when you started this, walk through kind of the team expansion, or kind of what, when you started it, what were you doing? Probably everything. And then kind of how did you decide to outsource or hire, and kind of what was your workflow in terms of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was just me for the first 15 months. And this is when I was creating the recipes. So I went off like Pinterest and food blogs, and it took me about a year to move from to land on the recipes in my kitchen, take them to a commercial kitchen and to a contract manufacturer. And then I hired my first teammate, who actually came from Kind, with an extensive field sales and field marketing background. I really needed somebody who had industry experience. I was in the military before I started this and didn't really have experience in CPG besides being a consumer and loving food and loving to make food. It was her and I for about 6 months. And then we brought on somebody on the operation side. So we had someone in sales, myself, and who is now our VP of ops on our operation side. And then it was the three of us for a while. And we just started building out different pieces of the puzzle for us. We have a pretty large field sales and marketing team. We have been very boots on the ground to this point. There's 8 people on our field sales and marketing team now. There's 15 total in our company. We keep growing, but I really, it's been, we have gotten to a certain checkpoint or milestone in the business, or really, I bet, it's actually better to describe it as a pain point get to a pain point where we're running up against a wall and are unable to figure it out internally. And so we should probably go hire somebody who has a little bit of experience doing this, or find a partner who has experience doing this, you know, better than we can, because one, everybody's stretched so thin. And I think that's just a commonality across all startups. And then two, like you can't, there's no replacement for great people and great partners. There's just really just no replacement for that. So we've been growing as we build, been growing a lot recently as we've been expanding into retail and expanding online. And then as, you know, as we expand from a bar company to a breakfast company, which is what Overeasy was always intended to be, our team will start growing pretty fast as well.
Awesome. So you're selling into, you know, Wegmans, Whole Foods. So through distributors, you know, direct wholesale, also what, Amazon, direct to consumer. So kind of how do you kind of report or view each of those sales channels, or even give some examples maybe in one or two of them of how you identify success, not just maybe top line revenue, but also then kind of how you look at like metrics from maybe a financials or margin or CAC or, you know, lifetime value kind of situation for maybe a sales channel or two.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with retail, and it's completely, we just base it off of velocities. Like, how are we doing in the stores in which we have distribution? You know, there's the common pitfall that everybody talks about in CPG is like gaining distribution before you build awareness and build velocities in your current distribution. And that's great in the short term, but it's really like it could be a death sentence when you have widespread distribution. You've paid a lot in terms of trade spend in order to get that distribution, and then no one's buying your product. So velocities and on a, you know, unit per store, per SKU, per week basis is the number one KPI for us in retail. And then online on D2C, it's lifetime value. It hasn't been a big focus of ours to date, like running ads, because we, you know, we're still ironing out some of our internal branding. And it's a challenging, it's a dynamic world. And, you know, with the iOS updates and CAC has just kind of gone through the roof for a lot of companies. And so it's a challenging equation to solve, challenging field to play in. But making sure that like when somebody buys or somebody comes onto our website and buys Overeasy bars, like they have a fantastic experience from the moment they order to when they get the product, and, you know, they fall in love with it. And so they're going to reorder because we just cannot win. We cannot build a business if we're having people order one time. So we're very focused on lifetime value on D2C. And we also have a huge food service business too. We're in nearly every NFL locker room. We're in dozens of MLB, NBA, NHL locker rooms, college athletic departments around the country. And then that is really number of accounts we get into. You know, it's a hard channel to forecast in because there's seasonality. You know, you don't know, there's not like a review the same way there is for all these retailers. Like, it is just very much a lot of hustle and grit to get into some of these accounts. So we're just trying to get into more accounts, more food service accounts that we feel the product and the brand is a good fit in. And that's the number one metric for us in food service. How many accounts are we in? And of course, like top line sales there as well.
Great information. In terms of pricing within each of these specific channels, when you go to market, or even like the new SKUs you'll be rolling out at some point in the future from a breakfast bar standpoint, how do you analyze price, or how do you determine price? Is it market-based? Is it COGS plus? Kind of, is it a mix of it? Like, how do you look at that? Because I know a lot of founders kind of always kind of go back and forth on understanding or determining that.
We've learned a lot. We're actually learning a lesson right now on it. So to start, it was market-based. What do we have to be priced at to be competitive? And I, like, after the recipes were already set, it was like, okay, well, what's the price here? But we have very premium ingredients. We have no fillers in our product. There's no added flavors. Like, everything is just what you would buy at a grocery store, or what you would have in your own kitchen. So our product is expensive to make. And so we tried initially to be like, well, let's see what all the competitors are doing and be somewhere in there that we're not too expensive. We're not too cheap. So we're definitely, it's a premium product. And it crushed our margins doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was under the false understanding that you could continue to drive down COGS and that you just like make more and then COGS, it'll be a linear decrease, in your COGS. And it's just not true. It is very difficult. And we are very good at working with our partners and have some great partners that are in it for our long-term success. And obviously understand that, like, hey, the more we sell, the better margins we have. Like, that's a win-win for all of us. But there is a bottom, there is a floor on like what you can get your COGS down to. And if you don't price yourself appropriately to your product, then you won't be successful, right? Like, you'll just continue to burn cash. And that's what we've learned probably over the last year. And so we're going through an exercise now where we're thinking the right way about it, at least the way that we think is the right way about it. So we're like, mm-hmm. Our product is a premium product. Our ingredients are premium ingredients. And we need to price ourselves appropriately. And if there's any disconnect with the consumer, then we have to do a better job of educating the consumer on why our product is priced the way it is, not trying to compete or keep up with the Joneses,
yeah.
With all our competitors. So that's a hard lesson that we're learning now, or we did learn, I would say, probably over the last year, like I said, but we're rectifying it at the moment.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's, the day and age we live in the last 12 months in relation to just kind of inflation, soaring kind of freight cost, limited supply on various items, advertising on, Instagram or Facebook or Google, like your cost structure of your product and the COGS, it seems to me across the board just keeps on increasing. And so it's really understanding kind of where your price point is in terms of, where your consumers were willing to buy. So interesting on that aspect. When you look at, from an inventory perspective of, the growth that, Overeasy is having or has had and planning on having, how are you managing like inventory buying, inventory planning, not understanding what your kind of your whole supply chain setup looks like, but, are you doing it? How do you do it at a company-wide level? Then how do you even like segment it down at the sales channel level or the location level?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so I have a couple ways to kind of tackle this. I'd say like high level, we work very closely with our contract manufacturer on sourcing all of our ingredients. It has been a challenge given the current the current world. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, everybody listening to this, and you probably experience this a lot too with all of your clients. And there's supply chain challenges across every industry. But it's about having, for us, very close relationships with our contract manufacturer and our 3PL to make sure that we are getting, we are not building our working capital more than absolutely has to be, right? Like it's a fine line of, well, we have to have enough raw ingredients to flex up our inventory. If we take on a new account or we have, an unexpected boom in sales. But also our working capital to be more than it has to be. We don't want that cash to just be tied up in oats and peanuts sitting at our contract manufacturer, sitting in our warehouse. We have one KPI that we're extremely focused on for our supply chain, and that's days sales inventory. So really that unites our entire team. It's our VP of operations who leads the charge there and brings it up in all of our S&OP meetings. And it's a big focus for our team, big focus of his, but it requires our sales team to like actually give accurate sales forecasts and then hold ourselves to like, hey, this is what we said we were going to sell. Because if we have too much inventory, you know, that's held up at our, in our warehouse, there's a number of ramifications that result from that. One, obviously we have our working capital is much higher than it needs to be. And as any high growth business can appreciate, like you can limit yourself, you unintentionally limit yourself and your growth if your working capital is too high.
Mm-hmm.
And so day sales inventory like helps us keep our working capital down. It also helps us provide a better experience for our consumer. You know, like every food product has an expiration date on it.
Yep.
And every food product is better the day that it's made than, you know, even halfway through the expiration product. Every product is like that. Everything's better fresh out of the oven. And so we want people to have the product as fresh as possible. I mean, you can still enjoy it. Our expiration date is a year. So you can still enjoy it in a year, but there's nothing, you know, better than it being fresh out of the oven. So, you know, we focus on minimizing day sales inventory at the moment while having a reserve so we can flex up if needed, and also having an agreement with a contract manufacturer. It's like, hey, we own these days of production. So especially as we're growing in this, as we go through these like uncertain times, like you have to give us the ability to flex up production if we need to, so we don't have to overproduce and we constantly have old products sitting in warehouse and we're pushing it to retailers or distributors that we're really not too excited about. And then ultimately, you know, the worst case scenario is that the customer has a bad first experience and it's like a Overeasy bar is not as good as everyone says they are.
Yes. I think the great answer on that. Two follow-up questions.
Yeah.
You said you were burning cash big time because you're pricing, you know, where you're at with your business now with kind of moving to the next phase of Overeasy, are you going to be identifying or will you be managing cash differently with kind of, you know, startup setup now, maybe like more, you know, moving into the maturity phase or like the next phase of the business? Will there be a difference of how you manage cash or inventory with that?
Yes, we are shooting for profitability now.
Gotcha.
It has been to this point, been around like brand building. Yeah. And now we have the foundation for which you're going to see us do a lot of very exciting like brand building over the next 12 months. And we have great retail partners that we're very excited about, great food service partners we're very excited about, an awesome Amazon partner that's really helping us win in that channel. But I don't subscribe to the D2C mentality that, you know, you... Or like just the mentality that has killed a lot of companies over the last 10 years of just, you can always get more cash. Like that's not a true business. And in some industries, like the beverage industry, it's very cash intensive. You have to get distribution. There's only so much distribution because there's only so much cooler space. The food thing for food is like, we can sell our bars anywhere. We can sell our bars on a coffee shop countertop. You know, we can sell them directly to consumers and it's not too, like D2C, it's not too expensive for us to do that way. So now we are very focused on getting the profitability. Our cash conversion cycle is a big KPI that we're focused on. So we can continue to grow and fund our own growth and not be reliant on external funding to take on the next big client or, you know, build up inventory if we're going into a big retailer, big wholesaler. So yeah, for us, it's all about getting to profitability next.
Awesome. When you're looking at
2022.
Awesome. Yeah. When you're looking at, you know, P&Ls and different financial reports, like looking at, you know, the growth phase of the business of brand, brand growth, brand awareness versus then looking at it, focusing and making decisions on profitability is a different game. Mm-hmm. When you're handling inventory and you kind of discussing inventory, you know, expiration dates and things like that, you know, I know you use like inventory system to your inventory or, you know, yeah. How, from your perspective, having that level of visibility or automation or that tool at your forefront, has that really helped out your business? And and if so, like how?
Oh, it absolutely has helped out our business. And I just think the visibility and clarity around KPIs and around where you sit in terms of an inventory standpoint and just working capital that's out there, and where what it would take in order to minimize working capital and minimize like day sales inventory, minimize cash conversion cycle, and like where that puts you in terms of lead times with suppliers. And if they're like, what is the right balance there of, you know, having the minimal amount of inventory on hand, but being able to not having to pass up an opportunity because you can flex up. And we wouldn't be able to do that if we didn't have a great inventory tracker and our VP of ops, who's like very in tune with it. And then also if we didn't fully understand exactly, you know, how like our lead times with suppliers, and we didn't have constant communication with them to where they can tell us, hey guys, in 2 months, it's going to be hard for you to get apples. And, you know, in the 6 weeks that, you know, we usually give them to you in, or 3 weeks, whatever it is. And so we're like, all right, we better order these ahead of time. And even though we're going to have more inventory on our books, it's a lot better than being out of stock, you know, mm-hmm. at our retailers. So those, like, I just think that visibility and clarity around KPIs and like where the business stands is the only way you can make smart decisions. Otherwise you're just flying blind.
Yeah. And inventory, the key, you know, to any inventory based business is inventory efficiency, inventory ROI, like
yes.
having the least amount of inventory in hand with to generate the highest amount of revenues, but not to lose sales. And so it's this constant game. And when you have four or five flavors right now, and you're going to go to different, you know, you're creating a new segment or a new, going from a bar to a breakfast, you know, brand. There's so many different SKUs. There's so many different suppliers, so many different commands, so many different timing lead times that you just need to stay so proactive on those items in terms of what's on hand, what cash do I have available? How do I fund this? When do I need to bring it in? So it's definitely a key aspect of any inventory-based business. And especially as you're ready to go to kind of growth mode. From a financial reporting standpoint, you know, segmenting by different sales channels on the P&L and understanding the different kind of KPIs, the different reporting mechanisms within each sales channel, you know, direct consumer via Shopify is different than Amazon, right? It's different than distribution. In terms of, you know, kind of reviewing those on a monthly basis, you know, is there any specific kind of sales channel reporting you really dive into outside of some of the stuff we've already chatted about? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd say each sales channel is just an equation. And I think of like the end result, if it's, you know, net revenue, it's just an equation. Like for D2C, it's website traffic multiplied by your conversion rate, by your average order value, right? And then it's like your repeat order rate. And I think on food service or on retail, it's your average velocities multiplied by how many, you know, placements you have in stores multiplied by how many stores you have. And so like we break it down, we get very granular there because there's certain variables you can control and certain variables that are just in the equation. You know, so for us, when we break down our financials, we want to know what is the equation for each sales channel and what is the key metric that we can actually make a decision around that's going to impact that variable or that metric. So like for D2C, if it's average order value, we're like, hey, we don't have the funds to increase, or we're not ready to build brand awareness to drive more traffic to the website. Our conversion rate, like we already optimized that. But like our average order value, like we could sell more to the same consumer. And that'll, you know, improve our margins because shipping is not going to be linear, you know, the same way as average order value would be. We get granular to that level. And then we also tie expenses to individual sales channels. Because with us having four sales channels, food service, which is big for us, which usually isn't big for early companies. It's, you know, usually an afterthought after you have saturated, you know, retail and D2C. So food service, retail, D2C, and Amazon, like we really need to know what is the profitability of each of those sales channels, because we could be spending a lot of money in a channel that like really isn't profitable for us. And so like being very mindful of that, tying our expenses to individual sales channels whenever we can, while being mindful that there are certain brand building activities that you cannot tie to a specific sales channel. So somebody can go and see our brand online and then go to Whole Foods and buy it.
Yep.
Or vice versa. And so, but we at least give it a shot. We at least, you know, try to tie our expenses to a specific sales channel so we can have discussions on like, guys, how well is Amazon really doing? Mm-hmm. How well is food service like really doing? Are we like, if we spent more in food service, do we see an uptick in retail? Like, why is that the case? And is that scalable? So we get very granular with each sales channel and like really try to analyze it. Is this profitable? And if it's not, what is the metric or what is the variable that we can manipulate in order to change that story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just from kind of my visibility to things, I think having identifying, reporting, and segmenting them by channel or a specific customer or something really helps you make better decisions on whether you, to your point, what variable can I tweak, and or, hey, I'm going to forecast the next 12 to 24 months. Like, you have to have individual forecasting within each sales channel. Or the last decision, to your point, is this really worth my time or not? Is this a break even, or is this a lost leader channel? But does it impact your overall brand equity of the other channels? Great, but maybe if it doesn't. So really, I think getting to that level really helps out, to make the best decision that you can for the organization. Now we're getting towards the end of the podcast, kind of the one do and one don't here. So to your, fellow CPG brand owners, founders, somebody that's getting ready to maybe launch a brand, what is one do that from a recommendation to those folks?
Well, I have a few, and I guess they apply to people at different stages. And of course, I'm still, learning as I go. I think a big one is like, don't underestimate the power of having spectacular people on your team. Like everything that we've done at our company, and everything that we will continue to do with OverEasy is, just a result of like having fabulous people, like hardworking, salt of the earth individuals that believe in our mission, that are smart, that are resourceful. Like, that is it. Everything after like me deciding, okay, I'm going to start this company, is all a result of the people involved. And everything that happens is just a product of the people that are involved, the good and the bad. And so I think like it's, the biggest challenge of a startup is it's all a people business and making sure you have the right people on the bus. One don't is, and I guess that could be a don't, but one don't is like, don't get complacent, I would say. And I would say that like, I have heard this narrative so much about, you just need to own this one business, or like this one product. You just need to own your one, specialty or one area of your core business, and just focus on that. Like, I can tell when certain parts of our business are not going to be a success. And like, I think that there's a lot of companies out there that are like working really hard to their own death, that are already set up for failure. And so what I would say is just like, being very honest with yourself, being very humble, and like making changes before the industry tells you that there needs to be a change, before like someone gives you the negative feedback that like, hey, there needs to be a change. Like, really, we look ourselves in a mirror, and we're not perfect. We have failed at this plenty of times, and we'll probably fail at it plenty more times. But like, we ask ourselves, like, is this really going to be a success? Like, no one said it hasn't been, and we have no reason to believe besides our own intuition that it's not going to be a success. But like, something in our gut is like, no, that's not right. Or on the opposite side, like being very honest with themselves and like, hey, I know everybody said, don't do this. And this is like against the industry best practices, right? Or the industry guide, but like, screw it. We think it's the right way to go. And like, you have to trust your gut. So just being like very honest, very open, removing like any ego, which is like always harder to do than to say. That's probably the biggest thing, you know, the biggest advice that I've been trying to tell myself and will continue to tell myself. And, you know, hopefully it's helpful for other people too.
I think that's great information. I mean, clearly you've done a great job so far in building a team of 15 people from zero, right? People are people, man. Every business is a people's business. So I think, you know, you discussing that is clearly key to everybody. And even if you're an inventory-based business, the team is the team, and they're the people that are going to help take you to wherever you're going to go. And then, you know, having conviction on your decisions and data that helps support those decisions and move forward. I think, you know, that your don't that you mentioned really shows, like, you know, the entrepreneur in you, right? Like, I'm not going to go always with the grain. Part of the entrepreneur mindset is against the grain, and why am I going to do that? And let's go and blaze that path. So
that's the whole beauty of entrepreneurship is that you get to do something for the first time in a way that nobody else has done it. And like there, I don't believe in business school, I had the privilege of listening to a lot of successful entrepreneurs and CEOs come in and like talk about their case studies and talk about their path to success or their path to failure. And the biggest lesson I learned is like, there is just no blueprint. Mm-hmm. And so embrace that. And like people that try to tell you exactly what you should be doing, like, and that don't start with, this is just my perspective, please take it with a grain of salt. They want to be experts. But like, I think everything needs to be taken with a grain of salt. That's the whole beauty of entrepreneurship. Somebody decided to do it a little different and it worked.
I agree, man. That rings true to me and I can't believe so. Well, good stuff, Kyle. I really appreciate your time. The insight was fantastic. You know, love the brand. Love the definitely had a couple bars already. Love it. Can you tell the audience where they can buy Overeasy? You know, what flavor is your favorite? Give us a little sales pitch here.
Yeah. All right. So we have 7 flavors. You can buy our bars on overeasyfoods.com. We're also on Amazon. We're also in Whole Foods. We'll be national with Whole Foods in May. Wegmans and a whole bunch of other retailers up and down the East Coast and into the Midwest. My favorite is our toasted coconut. I'm a huge Girl Scout cookie fan, and it tastes exactly like a Samoa Girl Scout cookie, which is why I love it so much. And so I think that's a big favorite. Peanut butter, dark chocolate. I mean, people are just addicted to peanut butter and everyone likes chocolate. So that's another big favorite. But the bars are essentially like a bowl of oatmeal in a bar, high protein, high fiber, very clean ingredients, no fillers, no flavors needed to be added. If it tastes like apples and cinnamon, it's because of the apples and the cinnamon in the bar. So I just made these like I wanted to make our bars as if somebody had 30 minutes to make them themselves in their own kitchen. And I figured I would just do it to make life easier on everybody else. So that's the gist behind Overeasy. Please give them a try. Strongly believe it's the best bar in the market and definitely has the most heart out of any bar in the market. So give them a shot. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Brad.
Awesome, Kyle. Thanks again. Take care. That's episode number 17 of the Monthly Podcast with Kyle Maggard from Overeasy. Take care.
See you.